BootlegNetwork.com, episode 107. Well, greetings again. We've got a new month, November. No, I'm not recording this in November, but that's when I'm releasing it. So, hey, welcome to November. This is pretty cool being able to welcome November when it's still October. Are you confused yet? Don't worry. It's all good. Randy Cantrell, Dallas, Texas. Welcome to the Yellow Studio. This is episode 107. I'm going to affectionately title today's episode The Reality Distortion Field. I guess it's distortion field. Cognitive Bias and Mindset. Steve Jobs proved its power. That's the topic. And, well, you're driving the bus. I'll explain. Next. Armed with your input and my glass of Dr. Pepper, diet. Dr. Pepper. Dr. Pepper's right here, by the way. Right here in Texas. Texas born, and it is the elixir of life. Well, for people like me who are teetotalers. Steve Jobs, it is reported, was very accomplished in the art of practicing the reality distortion field. I'm not real certain that it was an art or is an art. I know it's not a science. And, you know, when you stop and think about it, I don't know that there's anything quite reality-oriented about it either. I'm going to start a discussion today. We'll see how far we get. I don't want to make these shows crazy long. I'd like to keep these to half hour or so. So we'll just see how far this takes us. I sent an email out to my minuscule list some time ago asking for suggestions, and I went back through some other emails and voicemails that I had gotten to just kind of see what the topics were that people really kind of wanted to hear me riff on about. And one that came up, well, it came up in a variety of different terminology. Mindset, self-talk, paradigm. There were a lot of, well, I won't say a lot, but there were a number of people that termed it paradigm. And how can we shift our paradigm? How can we approach things with a different paradigm? Right? You used to never hear that paradigm. But I know paradigm shift since about, since sometime probably in the late 90s till now, that term has caught some traction. But they all had to do with the same thing. Quite frankly, they all had to do with psychology, kind of our own psychology. Mindset is probably the easiest way. And I'd long kind of ignored that in large part because there's so much out there about it. I mean, a lot of people talk about it. A lot of people write about it. There are a lot of videos and podcasts and books and blog posts. And so it was just never. And now it's important to me. I think about it, but I don't know that I think about it, you know, quite like some people. The Secret and The Law of Attraction are probably two of the biggest things that we've heard in recent years. And, well, I'm here to tell you, I don't believe in either one. How do you like those apples? And, sure, I'm willing to explain. So that's the subject. I want to begin by talking about the allegory of the cave. The allegory of the cave, if you haven't heard this, the allegory of the cave, and I'll put a link in the show notes to the Wikipedia version of this, but let's see if I can just, you know, if I can tell this succinctly. In Plato's allegory of the cave, and I'm not sure. I've always heard it ascribed to Plato, but I'm reading this Wikipedia thing, and it is written, it says, according to Wikipedia, as a fictional dialogue between Plato's teacher Socrates and Plato's brother, who knows, I don't know how to pronounce his name, Glaucon, Glaucon. I'm sorry, but I don't profess scholarship when it comes to these kinds of works. I'm not a big Plato or Socrates guy. But in this story, Plato begins to describe a scenario where people kind of mix up reality and illusion. And the allegory is simply this. Imagine a cave where there are some prisoners in this cave, and they are chained, and they have been held from the time of their youth. They have been held in this cave, chained, so that their head is fixed to gaze against a cave wall. And behind them, there is this large fire. Now, as people are walking between the fire and the prisoners, this walkway that exists between the back of the prisoners and the fire. You with me? So we've got people that are chained. They've been chained here from the time that they were children. And they have seen nothing except the cave wall. But there is this fire behind them, and between them and the fire is a walkway where people walk, and people carry a variety of different things. And so animals and all kinds of things are walking in this path, and it's casting shadows on the wall. Now, these prisoners, all they see, all they ever see, are these shadows cast by people and animals and things walking on this walkway between the fire and their backs. And all they hear is whatever noise bounces off of those walls. So Socrates makes the suggestion that those prisoners would take the shadows to be very real things. And all of these echoes, all of these sounds, well, it's all they would have ever heard. It's all they would have ever seen. And if they were to be released and freed and permitted to turn around, if somebody were to show them, look, here's what's been casting these shadows. Socrates argues that they wouldn't believe that that's what they had been seeing. Because for so long, they would have been looking at the reflection of these shadows, and they would have been listening to the sounds reflected off the wall of this cave. They wouldn't believe it. Now, there are a number of people who use the Plato's allegory of the cave to suggest, well, I'll go you better than that. They don't suggest it. They just outright say it. And I think they're right. We make false assumptions all the time. Now, it has been said that the moniker for fear, F-E-A-R, is false evidence appearing real. Well, that's exactly what you've got. with the allegory of the cave. You've got people who have, they have seen the shadows. They've heard the noise bouncing off the cave wall. That's false evidence. It appears real. It appears to be one thing. It's not that at all. It is said, and if I've got it correct, it was back in the early 80s, someone ascribed the notion of Steve Jobs possessing the ability to practice the reality distortion field. I mean, there were engineers and there were programmers that, you know, what Jobs would set about to do, they would say, this is technically impossible. We can't do this. You know, you're dreaming. It could be argued. And of course, here recently, we've seen Steve Jobs, his biographer, has been on 60 Minutes, and his biography was released, a week or two ago. And it's, I haven't read it yet. But I did see the 60 Minutes interview, and I have read excerpts from the book. It could be argued that the reality distortion field, Plato's allegory of the cave, that Steve Jobs had this vision, he had this perspective, and it wasn't always steeped in reality. And so we could argue, well, much of Apple's success perhaps could be attached to the fact that Steve Jobs had this mindset that pushed the envelope. Even pushing the envelope so far as to go beyond what was even reasonable or real. I think there are design people, and there clearly are engineers, because we've all read and seen enough evidence to know that people inside Apple were definitely pushed by Jobs. I mean, he was a pretty stern taskmaster, evidently. Now, let me back up just a bit, and I'll come back to this, because when we go to Wikipedia, you know, and why shouldn't we? Everybody does. When we look at mindset as defined by Wikipedia, and I don't know how this is going to help you, but let's talk about it. Here's what Wikipedia says. In decision theory and general systems theory, a mindset is a set of assumptions, methods, or notations held by one or more people or groups of people, which is so established that it creates a powerful incentive within these people or groups to continue to adopt or accept prior behaviors, choices, or tools. Long sentence. I'll put a link. Go read that for yourself. Now, I am a systems kind of guy. In fact, when I first went into college, I confess to you that I went into engineering. Can you believe that? I had a propensity for math, equaled perhaps only by my propensity for, cauliflower. No, we just weren't meant to be. So I very quickly left and got into journalism, broadcast journalism to be specific. Boy, that became useful. No, I never did use it. I had no desire to be behind a microphone. Yeah, go figure. Certainly had no desire to be behind a camera. You know, I just wanted to write. Well, quite frankly, what I wanted to do is I wanted to be a cartoonist, but that didn't quite work out. But I digress. I've taken a number of assessments. You probably have too. And in every assessment, I've tested quite high when it comes to my propensity to be very systematic. And I sort of think like an engineer. And that's no shock to me. I don't think it's a shock to people that know me well. So I get the whole thing about systems and a systematic approach to things, but our mindset, here's what Wikipedia says, and so kind of hang your hat on this. It's a set of assumptions. Now, these, they might be right, but they might not be right. Methods, well, they might be right, and they might not be right. Or notations. held by one or more people or groups of people, which is so established. I mean, it's so powerful. It's so ingrained in us that it creates a powerful incentive within us. So basically, we keep on doing what we've always done. We keep on making the choices that we've made. We keep on using the same kind of tools we've made. And in fact, this is an interesting phrase to me. Because now Wikipedia says the phenomenon of cognitive bias is also sometimes described as mental inertia, groupthink, or a paradigm. Ah, there's the word. And it is often difficult to counteract its effects upon analysis and decision-making processes. Cognitive bias. Cognitive bias. Now, we all have it. I know some people, and perhaps you do too, who like to claim that they are so open-minded, you know, that they have no biases. Well, listen, if you're breathing, you have a bias. Your bias may be in favor of something, it may be against something, but you have biases. And these biases probably come from, well, from your experience. You've adapted some things over time. You have embraced some things over time. You've rejected other things over time. And so you have a cognitive bias. Now, let's go back to Steve Jobs, shall we? Steve Jobs practiced, by all accounts, reality distortion field. He saw things the way he wanted to see them, and he often saw them, according to the biographer, he saw them the way he wanted them to be. I remember being told years ago by a business person who had a rather stern father as a taskmaster, and he said that his father remembered things the way they should have been, not how they really were. Well, don't a lot of us do that? That's some element of this reality distortion field. Sadly, it is reported by the biographer of Steve Jobs that when he goes to the doctor and he is diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, the good news is that it has been caught early, and upon being caught as early as his was caught, could be quite curable. No guarantees, of course, but the odds were tremendously favorable. Jobs embraced the reality distortion field once more. Jobs embraced his cognitive bias, and at this point, his cognitive bias, his mindset, if you please, his cognitive bias was anti-traditional oncology, traditional medicine. And so he rebuffed it. His biographer reports that it was as though he could think in ways that he could ignore it and it would go away. I'm paraphrasing. And before you get so high and mighty and judgmental against Steve Jobs, think about yourself, think about your life, and think about the times that you try to think, if I just ignore it, it will go away. And boy, don't an awful lot of people do that when it comes to their health. We hear lots of stories about that. Now, I'm 54, and there are things that men and women, when they get to be my age, they're just things that you should do. There's certain medical things that you should do, checkups and so forth, that you just simply should do to protect yourself. Let's take something as unpleasant as the colonoscopy. It's amazing to me how many men I encounter who've never had a colonoscopy, and they're like, "Yeah, that ain't happening." And you know, you think those of us who have gone through such a process, we think, you know, you're crazy. I mean, this cognitive bias that you have against having that procedure could cost you your life. I mean, colon cancer, I don't know the stats. I should have looked before I hit record, but I didn't. But the a very curable thing if caught early, as are many forms of the dreaded C word, cancer. Well, but, you know, if I ignore it, if I don't know about it, then it's as though, you know, it's just stick your head in the sand. It's the same kind of mindset. So Steve Jobs is diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. I don't know exactly how the conversation went. I've not read the biography yet. But according to the biographer and the interviews that I have seen, including the 60 Minutes episode, Steve's cognitive bias kicks in against traditional medicine, in this case, traditional oncology. And he opts for less traditional methodologies. He opts to practice what he had long practiced, the reality distortion field, and to think that, well, what a lot of people think won't happen to me. I'm bigger than this thing. I can whip this thing. Now, that's the mindset. 9 months go by, and now his condition is progressively worse. His chances for survival now, they have plummeted. His chances for survival in a 9 month period went from quite high to ridiculously low. All because of the reality distortion filled cognitive bias and the mindset that Steve Jobs embraced. I think it could be successfully argued that the very thing that drove him and perhaps drove Apple to the heights of success also took his life earlier than it needed to be taken. His biographer says he regretted the decision. I'm certain he did. So what can we learn from this? As terrible as this decision is, it proves to us, I think, the power. I think Steve Jobs proves the power of the reality distortion field, cognitive bias, and mindset. And I think he proves it in a positive way, and he proves it in a negative way all at the same time. The very thing that drove him to believe that something was possible when engineers and programmers might have argued with him, we can't do this. And he would continue to reject a design. He would continue to reject some interface, and he would continue to push it back across the table and say, do it again, do it again, do it again, do it again, driving people crazy. But can we argue the success? Why, of course not. I have before me a 27-inch iMac, an i7 processor iMac. I have here in the studio a MacBook Pro as well. I have an iPhone. Okay, it's the old one. It's a 3G. No, I don't have the 4S yet. I don't even have a 4. I don't even have a 3GS. I had the first, you know, the big honking iPad, or not iPad, the iPod. I've got that. I've got iPod shuffles. I bought the very first Mac in 1984, and I've talked about that before. I won't go into it now, but I remember being just in. It was just phenomenal, and it was crazy expensive. No, there is no doubt. There is no doubt, in spite of the failures, Next, the Lisa, there's no doubt that this reality distortion field, this cognitive bias and the mindset that Steve Jobs had, that he could conquer the world and he could make these things happen, that he could avoid the laws of whatever, that he could do it his way, that he could make things happen, that he could impose his will. There's little doubt that played a positive role in giving us some of the really cool products and even services. iTunes. Who'd have thunk it? Well, somebody thunk it. And Steve Jobs, his Apple, made it happen. And we think to ourselves, how can a man with such brilliance, how can a man with such drive, how can a man with such resilience to give a hoot what anybody thought? I mean, this was, by many accounts, this was not a kind-hearted man. This was a tough guy. He did not suffer people. You could argue, well, okay, he didn't suffer fools. Listen, he didn't suffer smart people. Evidently, this was a man who, by many accounts, well, I'll go you one better. By my account, this was a pretty miserable human being. I don't mind saying it. Take issue with me. I don't care. I don't think he was a pleasant human being. I think in many ways he was a scoundrel, and I don't think that merely the fact that he died makes him a saint. I've tweeted it repeatedly. Saints are determined by their behavior in life, not by the mere fact that they died. We're all going to die, and we're not all saints. But I think we can learn some things. I think this reality distortion fill, this cognitive bias, this mindset that drove him to think that he could do something, and he made it happen. Now, for every Steve Jobs, how many millions of people do you suppose there are who couldn't do it? Who may have believed it every bit as much as he believed it? I mean, the same guy who believed that it was possible to give us the iPhone also thought it was possible for him to overcome cancer. He was right on one hand, he was wrong on the other. What's the difference? I don't profess to know that. I simply do profess that psychology, that our own mindset, our own perspective, our own reality distortion field, it can serve to help us, but it can also serve to kill us. And I think we need to be probably more careful than we realize. Well, yes, I happen to be a person of faith. And if you are a person of faith, if you are a person who believes in the Scripture, I do. Scripture is quite clear about what we feed our mind, and that we should, as the Scripture says, guard our heart. Not our physical heart, but our spiritual heart, which is our mind. Now, people like to get all hung up in that, as a man thinketh, so is he. And the implication that many people who just lack understanding, in my judgment, what many people want to hang their hat on is the fact that, well, we can think about being rich and we can become rich. That's that whole law of attraction and the secret kind of stuff, which is garbage. And don't fall prey to that. It's just garbage. It does mean that what we have in our heart, the kind of person we really are, guess what is manifested in our life? Well, that's what's manifested in our life. Yes, there are people who can be hypocritical. There are people who can appear to be one thing, but really they are something else. But by and large, over time, we tend to show our colors. I mean, one of the things that happens today with all the public celebrity is we have these notions of who these people are because we see them on our TV screen. We hear them in our ears as they play their music, whatever. We have these perceptions, right? We create our reality distortion field. We have our cognitive bias. We develop our mindset. And we think that they are one thing. They may not be. Some may be. You hear a lot today about openness and transparency, and that's great and wonderful. I'm going to tell you, in my judgment, it's so much hooey with a lot of folks. I mean, to me, I'm by nature, I'm somewhat skeptical and I'm somewhat cynical. No, I'm a lot skeptical and I'm a lot cynical. And it has nothing to do with age. I was that way when I was 17. I don't know if it has to do with being in sales. I don't know. I don't know what it has to do with, but it's just how I'm wired. So when somebody starts talking a whole lot about being open and transparent, my radar goes up and I'm immediately thinking, okay, they're spending an awful lot of time trying to convince me. That's just almost a signal to me that they're working a little too hard to sell something that probably isn't right. I'm not saying all the time. That's my reality distortion field, my cognitive bias, my mindset. Am I right? I don't know. I don't know. I feel sometimes I'm probably right, and there are other times I may get it wrong because you know what? I do not have the ability to discern somebody's motives. I do not have the ability to discern their heart. I don't have that ability, and you don't either. And so what we do is we look at behavior. We look at what people do, and we draw these conclusions. Well, there's nothing wrong with that. That's completely appropriate. We do judge books by their cover. Is that wrong? No, it's not wrong. It's just how it is. When it comes to our own behavior, though, when it comes to our own choices, when it comes to those things that we devote ourselves to, whether it's whatever you want to do in your personal life, whether it's whatever you want to do in business, your career, there's little doubt that mindset plays a huge role. But I really think that it comes down to a couple of key points that I kind of will end on here. And that is, well, let me single out two in particular. Let me single out competence and confidence. Competence and confidence. Now, here we are in Dallas, Texas. Okay, I'm going to make an admission. It's Friday, October the 28th when I'm recording this. Now, you're listening to this on November 1st. So by the time that you're listening to this, the World Series is over. We know if the Cardinals won. We know if the Rangers won. As I'm recording this, we have no idea because last night I stayed up way too stinking late watching Game 6. The Texas Rangers had five. I'm not a baseball guy, but this was pretty fascinating television to me. I am a sports guy. Five leads they had in the course of that game. Five. Twice in two separate innings, they were one pitch, one strike away from winning the World Series for the first time in their 50-year history. I could logically argue that I really don't have, pardon the pun, Michael Vick, but I don't have a dog in this fight. I don't. It's not going to affect my life one way or the other. I'm in Dallas, Texas. I'm not crazy. I want the Texas Rangers to win. I wanted them to win last night. But as I watched that, I've watched this C.J. Wilson. And if you're not from around here and you don't listen to the radio around here. I mean, boy, you talk about a bragging dude. Man alive, he is one cocky beggar. Now, C.J. Wilson's reality distortion field, his cognitive bias, and his mindset is he is the stud muffin of all stud muffins. And the guy's done nothing, absolutely nothing, in postseason to prove that he even has the competence. But, boy, he seems to have the confidence. Well, does he really? Are we sure about that? It's kind of like that person that talks about openness and transparency. He talks a big game. It kind of makes me wonder, maybe he's not as confident as he would like us to think. That's why he spends so much time bragging. We've all seen that. We all know people. We've all got people in our lives that their lack of self-confidence is manifested in the outward show of tremendous confidence. Now let's take competence. C.J. Wilson and the Texas Rangers are clearly a competent team. Come on, you don't get to the World Series. You certainly don't get to the World Series twice in consecutive years by being incompetent. But boy, last night, Michael Young makes two errors. I mean, there were just errors all over the place. I mean, they did everything in their power to lose that game and succeeded, finally, in extra innings. I mean, you blow five leads. We're talking, and we're not talking one run. We're talking multiple. In some cases, we're talking innings where they had multiple run leads late in the game and still blew it. Go figure. But the pressure was on. The pressure was on, and I don't know what was going on in their mind, but as the wheels began to come off, you could just see it. If you were a Texas fan, you just sensed it. You just somehow knew they're going to find a way to lose, and sure enough, they did. Now, were they thinking that? I have no way of knowing. But on the other side of the field, in another dugout, I was looking at this team, and they too had this reality distortion field, and they too had this cognitive bias, and they too had this mindset. And with the swing of one bat by a hometown kid named Freeze, you saw them go from down in the dumps, fingers crossed, hoping against hope. And all of a sudden, you saw hope rise and you saw confidence rise. And with that confidence rising, competence, belief. There's little doubt that the power of what we believe we can do, that it can be manifested. And let me really emphasize the word can. It can be manifested into what we actually do accomplish. Now, you're not listening to the voice of a guy that believes that everybody can be anything they want. I don't buy that. Sorry, I just don't. There are a number of things that just are not possible for me. I've talked about this before. There are a number of things that are just not possible for me because I don't have the skill, I don't have the ability, and I'm too old. It's just how it is. The belief that every young child can grow up and one day become president is a joke. No, they can't. Not only can they not do that, there are countless other things that are far lower as far as society views things that they can't do. For us to try to teach our kids you can be anything you want to be is nonsense. No, you can't. You talk about a reality distortion field. You talk about a cognitive bias. You talk about saddling a kid with some baggage of mindset. I think it's just ludicrous. Yes, I think we encourage kids. The proverb says, train a child in the way he should go, and when he's old, he won't depart. Now, a proverb is a general, overall kind of truth. Are there exceptions? Of course there are. But generally speaking, we look at a child and we see the way a child is bent. How is this child given to go? Now, I happen to be the father of two kids, grown now, and they have kids of their own. And as I look at my grandkids, I keep telling my kids, look at them now while they're itty-bitty, because I got news for you. 20 years from now, that's still going to be how they are, because I see it in you guys. And other people who knew me when I was just a little kid, they see it in me. We're just kind of bent the way we're bent. We're kind of wired the way we're wired. Now, I don't mean when it comes to doing what's right versus doing what's wrong. I don't mean when it comes to bad behavior. Come on, we're all creatures of choice, and we can decide to do what's right. I mean, there's been all this talk about Bernie Madoff, you know, and he and his wife, it came out that they had this suicide pact. Okay, so are we to say that young Bernie, he was just destined to be old Bernie, the scoundrel? No, of course not. Might he have been bent toward deception? Maybe, I don't know. Have you ever known some little kid that was kind of bent toward a line? And if the parents didn't jump all over that and train this child to stop it, then that could be a behavior that the child embraced. Well, of course, we've seen that kind of stuff. What is your reality distortion field? What are your cognitive biases and what is your mindset? What are those things that are serving you well, as Steve Jobs had those things that served him well? And what are those very same things that could be killing you? They're there. You just have to find them. I don't know if that helped you or not. I frankly just intended to provoke some thought. And I intended to kind of riff on and, well, give my audience what they want. I tell you the thing that I learned about this, my own reality distortion field, my own cognitive bias, my own mindset, is presupposing that you kind of know what people listening to a podcast might want. You know, so I had the bright idea a week or so ago, you know, why don't I just ask? How hard was that? You know, it wasn't hard at all. And I knew that this was on the mind of people because I'd gotten this feedback. There wasn't anything magical about it. I'm not going to lie. Bruce led the parade. So I get this email from Bruce. He was the first to respond, by the way. And he gave me a really thoughtful, lengthy email. I think I mentioned Bruce in episode 105, and I've got high regard for Bruce. So I began to look back, and I began to think, you know, he's not the first guy to suggest this. So I went back, started looking, and I looked. And, of course, and like I said, it was called a variety of different things. Self-talk, determination, confidence, self-confidence, paradigm. That seemed to be pretty common. And I kept looking at all those and thought, yeah, you know, I mean, that's just how the listeners to this podcast were defining all the same topic. And the topic is mindset. Now, we could talk about it till the cows come home, and we still wouldn't have covered top, side, nor bottom of it. So I don't know that I've done you a lot of good, but I hope I've given you some things to think about. There's little doubt in my mind that these are things that affect all of us, and I think in some cases they serve us well, and perhaps the difficulty is knowing when. I mean, think of Steve. If Steve Jobs had been able to figure out, listen, this is really helping me. The fact that I'm kind of crazy and sane and I won't take no for an answer is really helping me in this one area. But when it comes to my health and this issue, I'd really better listen to people that probably know more than I know. I mean, I think one of the things that probably could have been destructive for him is I rather believe, like so many titans of industry, I rather believe that he probably felt he was the smartest guy in the room. I'm sure there's some benefits to that. I think for we mere mortals, Steve Jobs was a mortal. I don't know that it's the best route to take. I personally have never been able to muster that level of conceit or confidence. I feel quite capable. I feel quite good about this. I feel quite good about getting behind this microphone and trying to do something worthwhile. That you have to determine that. I'm not able to determine that. Only you can determine that because you're the audience, not me. I feel good about it. I feel competent. I do have some degree of confidence about it. I hope I'm helping, but I don't presuppose to be the smartest person in this conversation. I do feel like I'm capable and I'm smart enough to be part of the conversation, and I hope you feel the same way. I want you to feel the same way. This is BulaNetwork.com. This is the new rendition. We are now a new media company. That's pretty cool. I'm pretty excited about that. I may have some more to say about that. I continue to get questions about it. I hope you'll subscribe to the podcast. I would love your feedback. You can call that number over on the side of the website. My name is Randy Cantrell. The city of origin is Dallas, Texas, and this is The Yellow Studio.